Can everyone hear me? Right, great. Welcome, everyone. My name is Karupa, and welcome to this lunchtime session on building awesome HTML applications in Blend for Windows 8. So I should let you know that this talk is a repeat of what I gave a couple of days ago. So the title is similar, if the name is similar, if I look similar. You've probably already seen my talk, but, you know, feel free to stick around, but I would not be offended if you end up, you know, leaving right now as well. So my name is Karupa, like I mentioned, and I'm a PM on the Blend team in Visual Studio, and it's a team I've been working on for the past 5 years. I've worked on WPF, Silverlight, Windows Phone, and most recently HTML, and I'm going to be talking about that part of my work. So the agenda is very light. You know, I'm pretty hungry. I'm sure it's lunchtime for all of you as well, so let's try to get this over on time. I'm not a big fan of slides, so most of my time will be spent in Blend itself, having Blend do all the talking. So the introduction is almost done. Part of my time will be spent just giving you a feel for what Blend does, a very simple Hello World application. And then we'll get into some really cool demos involving building HTML applications, probably the kind of content that is probably most interesting to all of you. And then I'll start wrapping up by just talking about, at a high level, how to design for devices, a big area of investment for Windows 8 applications. And then wrap up with some highlights and questions and answers. I'll have to keep this talk pretty informal, so if you have any questions during any part of my talk, just feel free to just get my attention and ask the question. Microphones have been provided, but it might be very hard to, in the middle of my talk, to actually get up and speak from the microphone. So as long as you just yell your question out loud, I'll repeat it so everyone else can hear it as well. So with that, let's get started. So if you were to download on the web the Windows 8 developer tools, the free tools you have available, there'll be two applications you will be spending most of your time in for building your apps. You have Blend, and you have Visual Studio. Just out of curiosity, how many of you here have used Blend before? Excellent. And how many of you here have used Blend for building HTML applications? All right, just a few. Great. You know, lots of opportunity for converting all of you non-HTML users into it. So at a high level, without going into any great detail, I can just bucket Blend by saying it is optimized for visual design tasks. And I can bucket Visual Studio by saying it's optimized for coding and debugging. That does not mean that you can't do JavaScript, for example, in Blend, or you can't do HTML and CSS in Visual Studio. You'll probably just be more productive, and you probably have just a better time using Blend for visual design and Visual Studio for coding and debugging. So when we had this chance, you know, Blend has been able to create applications in WPF. We started off with a WPF designer, then Silverlight, Windows Phone, and many versions of it. And of course, recently we introduced a flavor of Blend for both XAML and HTML, each of which can actually build apps for the Windows Store. So that's actually, you know, pretty exciting. But for this purpose of this talk, I'm going to focus only on HTML, and I'm not going to talk about the XAML portions in this talk, but there are other talks at Build that covered the XAML portion, so I encourage you to check those out if that's an interest for you. So when we started out building Blend, or reimagining Blend, let's say, for HTML, we had several things we wanted to do. And one of the things that we kept going back to is that, you know, we have this chance of, essentially, we've created XAML tooling for a long time, but there are a lot of challenges, a lot of problems in HTML that are a little different. They're similar problems, but they're different problems as well. And to help address this, we kind of circled around this idea of wanting to build a professional design tool. And what it means is this. And knowing what it means can help you both as you're learning Blend, and also helps you give an idea of the mindset that we were in as we were designing the product. So by professional design tool, what I mean is this. There's a certain expectation that you're familiar with HTML and CSS. You can definitely use Blend, you can definitely be very productive building these applications if you don't know HTML or CSS, but you'll definitely find your way around much easier if you have some familiarity and some fluency with the platform. And the second, we give you as much or as little detail as possible. In the past, partly due to our own doing, HTML editors, especially visual ones, are not very much trusted. You know, there's a chance that we often put markup you do not want. We did things on your behalf that you may not have cared for. So we try to avoid all that. We try to remove a lot of the surprises that go with visually designing HTML. And you'll see a lot of those features as part of my demo shortly. And probably the favorite part of what I think Blend really does, the most value it really brings to the table, is it allows you to focus on the concepts and not the syntax. You know, another way of representing this is that, you know, it's a common saying is, you know, you want to solve the problem in the domain you're trying to solve it in. And that's what we really try to do with Blend. You know, we're doing with layout or color or working with, like, various kinds of transitions. We want to think about the problem in terms of what you're solving, not in terms of the syntax or the minute details of where a comma goes and all of that. So we will, you know, highlight all of these things in all the parts of my demo as well. So if there are no more questions, I'm going to start with a very simple Hello World app. And this is an app that both gets me, you know, interested in the whole product and just getting up there and speaking, but also gets you all, you know, I like some audience participation as well. So, you know, be prepared when I call for some help. And that was meant to happen, by the way. So I have Blend running. So here's, you know, just launched it. I'm going to create a new project. And because Blend supports both HTML and XAML and has a free version, you can choose between which of the project types you want. Because we're doing HTML, I have the HTML node selected. And we give you a handful of project templates. These templates give you a good starting point to build an application that is either blank, which is what we'll be doing, or create something that's more involved, something that's more representative of like a lot of the Windows applications that you'll find in the App Store. So I'm just going to create a blank app. Let's call this one Hello World 3. All right, so Blend has now launched. Let me just maximize this. So immediately when Blend launches, notice there are several things going on. The bulk of the space is taken up by what I call the artboard or the design surface. It's where all of your design visually just comes to life based on the HTML and CSS and all the JavaScript that is running as well. The second part of it is the two code editors you see at the bottom. You have the primary code editor on the left, and you have the secondary code editor on the right. And what these really do is they give you an idea of the HTML that's currently being modified, along with any styles that might be affecting at the same time. And a part of the reason why we're giving you this front and center has to go back with, we just want you to know that the HTML that you're writing is represented on the design surface, or if you're doing it visually first, whatever you're doing in the design surface is accurately being represented in the markup. And you can easily change and fix things as needed. So that's a good, you know, start. So what I want to do is I want to type Hello World. You know, very simple. In HTML, you have several ways of inputting text. And for this case, I'm going to use a heading 1 tag, an H1 tag. So what I'm going to do is launch the Assets panel, which is this categorized bucket of all the various controls that you can use, along with all of the HTML5 controls and the tags, like all the H1 tags, all the intrinsic controls, and all of that. So I'm just going to type in H1 to search for it. And I'm going to drag and drop it onto my design surface. Very simple. And notice once I've done that, once I inserted my heading tag into my document, you'll see that it is represented in your HTML. It is also represented in an area that, you know, that will gain more importance in a few seconds, the Live DOM. The Live DOM is similar to the Objects and Timeline panel you all might be familiar with in XAML. It is a live version of the document as it is viewed by the running application. So right now, this application is very simple, so you just see HTML, head, body, and H1. But once you start working with some JavaScript-generated content, you'll see that this UI actually becomes very useful for being able to help you diagnose and find some of the interesting content that might be there. So I'm H1 tag. Let me just type in Hello World. I'm just going to type it in directly in the design surface, but I can easily do it in the markup editor as well. Add a few exclamation marks, and you're good to go. So that's really just the easy construction part of Hello World. Now, the next part really is making it take up more space. You know, there's a lot of space available right here. It's a shame that it's only taking up a fraction of what's available. So when it comes to styling, when it comes to making things look visual, you really are talking about CSS, cascading style sheets. And it's a lot of investment we made in Blend to make styling your application very simple and very predictable. So there's several panels that you'll be spending a lot of time on when you're working on styling your application. One of the more important ones is the Style Rules panel. This panel gives you a view of all the style sheets that are currently affecting your document right now. You know, defaulted HTML is my current document. And there are two style sheets currently set. One is UIDark.css. And this is a style sheet that's provided to you by the Windows runtime. It is a framework-provided read-only style sheet that contains style rules for all the various controls, all the various look and feel, provided you want to mimic your application, mimic Windows' look and feel for your application. You can see it's a pretty sizable document that contains all kinds of things to essentially give you the traditional App Store look. The one that I'm going to be using, the one that's actually provided for you to write into, is default.css. It is by default just given a body style selector, along with some media queries that I'll touch upon later that help you design for various devices. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to create a new style rule. I have my H1 tag. I'm just going to be very simple and just say I want a tag selector. I'm going to type in H and then 1. And once I've done that, you'll see that my H1 selector is selected, and you can see there's an outline on the design surface indicating which of the elements are going to be affected by this particular style rule. And once you have the style rule selected, it's time to actually set properties on it. And that's where the CSS properties panel comes in, which is a categorized listing of all the CSS3 properties that are available for you to use as part of designing your application. So the first thing I want to do is make the text large, like really, really large. So the way you specify that is by the font size property, which exists in the text category. So here's where the audience participation would be kind of useful. So what value should I provide here? You know, currently it's set to a default size. You know, feel free to shout out numbers. I want the text to be large enough to cover up all the available space on the screen. 144, that's the first one I heard. Okay, that's, you know, that's a little small. Let's go higher. Pardon me? 200. Okay, let's double. Let's go to 400. Okay, that's a little too big. You know, let's take two bigger. You know, 340. That sounds perfect. All right, 340. And notice what I did here. I was able to use the visual editors, specify a pixel value, and you know we immediately put the properties for you in a way that you wanted. And I also was able to get immediate feedback on what I was doing. There's no lag. There was no delay between me entering a value and seeing what's going on. And the reason is that what you're seeing in Blend, what you're seeing on a design surface, is not an emulation. It's not a version of your app, you know, rendered in the best way that we think it's possible. When you're running Blend, you're actually running an instance of your application as it would be in on the runtime. So you're actually editing the live version of your app. And that becomes more important and more interesting when you start looking at applications that take advantage of JavaScript, for example, when you actually have on your design surface JavaScript-generated things just like popping up at you. So that's really, you know, really one of the interesting features about the tool that I think, in my opinion, sets it apart from pretty much all the other tools out there. Okay, so I have Hello World selected. And next, I'll just go into the background color as well while we're at it. I'm going to select the body element. And remember before that I mentioned that body has already been defined for me, and it's empty. I'm going to go ahead and find the background color. So one of the things about CSS, another piece of UI that you'll be spending a lot of time on, is most of the times, especially for very common elements, the final look of it is not defined at a single location. It's often this cascade of various style rules and style sheets from various documents, and even within the same document, that all essentially collide to give you the look that you want. And to help you, you know, peel back the various layers to inspect exactly where your style sheet is being affected, we have this piece of UI called the Applied Style Rules panel. And what this does is it gives you, essentially in specificity order, all the various locations this particular body element is defined, and all the way up to the most specific one, which in this case is inline, but I'm going to stick to the one that's default, that declared in default at CSS, and just specify a background color right here. But if I wanted to see where the color currently is coming from, I can just see in body UI.css, you can see the background color has been defined. So I'm just going to override that. I'm going to go to the background category. We have a color editor, the same one you might have seen in Blend for many years. We carried some of these good things over. And let's give it a nice blue color. All right, so you know, very quickly I was able to just set the color. Didn't have to worry about the hex code in this case. And that's that. You have Hello World. I can see it working. And very simple. You know, in less than, let's say, 5 minutes, you were able to go from a blank application to having Hello World style to be large with a dark background color. And along the way, I gave you a good overview of the panels that I'll be spending most of my time on in some of the more involved demos as I get to it. You know, as you'll find shortly, you know, while Blend may look a little intimidating, the concepts needed and the steps you'll need to do to style your application, it's just like, you know, numbers in the handful. And hopefully you'll see, you know, it'll be proven true in some of the more involved cases next. All right, if there are no more questions, I'm going to jump to the next part of the application, which is probably, you know, more interesting as well. Right.
Question.
Yes.
So you created that app in Blend. You compile that, then you sideload that into the Tableau. How would you bring that to your Tableau?
Okay. So the question was on, I have my application in Blend, it's currently designed, how would I load it onto my tablet? So Blend provides very few deployment operations, but the nice thing is we actually, you know, I'm actually, you know, jumping ahead now in my demo, but you can actually open the exact same project in Visual Studio, and Visual Studio provides all the deployment options for being able to load it, both upload to the store directly, or also being able to test on your tablet. If you just want to just test, you know, on your local machine, you can actually specify local machine or simulator and be able to test almost as well, you know, as you would on an actual device virtually. So you have those options in Blend. You have more options in Visual Studio. Great. All right, next, let's put the next part of this. HTML applications in Windows 8. And, you know, let me make this full screen. So, you know, all of you probably not come here to see Hello World. I mean, that's a demo that was done many years ago, probably in Notepad, probably even more primitive tools, you know, 15, you know, not sure what the taskbar is showing. We'll consider that a bug that will be fixed shortly. But what really makes these applications shine, what really makes Blend really shine, is in working on applications itself. So before I go into a demo of Blend for building applications, let me just take a step back and just talk about, at a very high level, some of the things that make HTML applications different from, let's say, websites, or even HTML applications you might build for the browser, different than those you might build in Windows 8. And I'm skewing this a little bit to things that are going to be demoed as part of what I'm doing, so it's not out there, it's not like a comprehensive list by any means of every single thing you need to focus on. So first of all, you know, when you talk about a Windows 8 application, it's really hard not to notice it has a very unique visual style to it. You know, you look at an app like, for example, the weather app, you know, it really pops at you. There's a lot of typography, it's very visual, and, you know, while the data it's showing is pretty sad and depressing, it's going to be raining from now until, you know, who knows when, but it's done so beautifully, you just can't help but feel happy about that. You know, it's just so good. So unique visual style is one of the, you know, big things. The next part is deep integration with Windows. What you have is you have applications that do a lot more than just display HTML and JavaScript and CSS. You have the ability to communicate with Windows runtime APIs. You can use JavaScript and call APIs that are tied into the very low level to runtime itself. You have integration with the rest of the OS. For example, I could be playing a song on the Xbox Music app. I could have it minimized, and I can still be using other applications while in the background the music is still playing. These kinds of integration with, for example, the various contracts that are available are all setting HTML applications on Windows 8 apart from the kind of applications you might just be building for the browser, even on just IE10 in the browser, because they're all very deeply tied into the overall container Windows 8 applications are running in. And a second part is a single-page navigation model. All the applications you build, no matter how complicated that might be, are different from websites. You know, in websites, when you go ahead and click on a link, you just change the URL from one to another, and you have various ways of passing state between the apps. What you do in applications, especially in applications in Windows 8, is that even if your application, like the Xbox Games app, you have lots of UI, you have lots of ways of navigating with the application and going to different parts of your application, the way you build it is by having one master HTML page, and then you swap out HTML either from the same page or from other pages using what are known as fragments. And I'll give you some demos on that. A lot of APIs to help make managing all this HTML that is loaded loosely from different locations very, very easy. And the last one, you know, no need for me to repeat this, you all probably know this already, is that applications built for Windows 8 are optimized for devices, and devices like the Surface RTs, which most of you probably have with you right now. You know, they are touch-optimized. You know, traditionally, applications have been optimized for keyboard and mouse, but with devices like a tablet, you have the ability to have a very touch-friendly UI, something which we haven't really emphasized heavily in the past. If you have a compass, you have accelerometers, you have, you know, gyroscopes, for example, all of these things can be taken advantage of using APIs provided by Windows. So we actually, you know, in many ways promote the ability to build applications that really take advantage of hardware characteristics that might not have been possible just thinking about a desktop or a laptop. So with that, let me go ahead and dive into the demo I'm going to be showing you. First, let me just open the application and show you what it is you'll be creating, and then I will build it from scratch and explain how it was done along the way. The application is very simple. It's called Pick a Flick. I'm going to go ahead and hit F5. The application is made up of two pages. This is the first page. It is very simple. There's some background images and a picture of a chicken. And when I click it, I go to navigate to another page, and all I'm doing here is connecting to the Rotten Tomatoes API and just getting data on movies that are currently playing in theaters around me. And it's very simple. I have some data, and what I'm doing is this data is being loaded into a Windows control called the Flip View control. You might have seen it before in demos, where you have a collection of items, and it just navigates you between the page, and it provides you with all these transitions and all this, the various beautiful UI that you might have to otherwise build from scratch, which is not fun, having done it before. All right, so let's go ahead and start building this application. I'm going to go ahead and create a new project, create a blank application. So the first thing I'm going to do is just load some images that were created already. I worked with a designer on this application, so he created some assets that I'm going to go and paste into my document. Okay, so what did I, you know, the projects panel is something I didn't talk about before, but it's basically a location where you can view all the files that make up your application. If you've used Visual Studio, for example, you've seen this UI many times. So I have my body element, I have everything selected. So what I'm going to do first is, one of the things you notice about my app was that it wasn't dark. It did not have a dark background to it. So I'm going to first take some very, you know, get the easy thing out of the way by just specifying a background color on the body element, something I've done before already. And as you probably know, that the default.css has the body element declared. I'm going to select it. I'm going to specify a background color. I can never remember the hex code for this, so I'm just going to paste it in. DFBF9A, yeah. I can do this demo at least 100 times. I still will not remember that hex code. DFBF9A, great. So I have my background selected. You know, like I said, it's very easy. And what I'm going to do next is create the HTML page that will be loaded as the first page in default.html. Now, default.html is never going to change. What will change is the content that's going to be loaded inside it. So what I'm going to do first is just create a blank page. I'm going to go to Add New Item, going to HTML page. I'm going to call this one homepage.html. Just hit Enter. And when I say blank page, it literally is a blank page. If you look at the HTML, there's absolutely nothing here outside of the bare minimum number of HTML tags needed to make my application work. And what I'm going to do is just add a div element via the assets panel and give it an ID value. And the reason I'm doing this is that once I load this document into default.html, I need to basically anchor myself into this document. I need to know exactly where to add my content to. And having a container from this document that gets loaded makes that infinitely easier. Let me call this one homepage container. I'm using the live DOM to add an ID value. I'll show you how to add a class value shortly as well. Okay, I have homepage.html. I have it created, and I want to load it into default.html. And for this part, I'm going to be writing some code, or in this case, I'm going to be pasting some code I've already written. So I'm just going to go ahead and copy the following into it. Just paste it in. Now, and what this code does is very simple. I basically use the query selector API to get a hook into the body element, and then use the fragments API just to load homepage.html. And once that page is loaded, I will call handle loaded page, which is currently empty right now, but we'll fill it in later. Now, all I need to do next is essentially call load initial page. So I'm going to go ahead and type in document.addEventListener. See, the reason I'm emphasizing this part is notice the kind of code editing experience you get in Blend. It is very basic. It is very much like Notepad with some color editing, which is great for simple things. If you want to make a simple value change, Blend is great for that. But why use Blend when, I mentioned earlier, you have a great tool in the form of Visual Studio for being able to write code? So just to, you know, to echo on this, the answer I gave to the gentleman in the front, you can open the exact same project in Blend in Visual Studio as well. We should have exact same project, exact same solution format. So you can actually seamlessly jump between each application depending on which part of the app you're currently designing. So I'm going to go ahead and open default.js. And notice that the code is exactly the same as what you had in Blend right here. I'm just going to close it out of Blend because no point in having it open in both. And what I'm going to write here is the same code I tried to restart or attempted to write inside Blend. Document.addEvent. See, notice immediately you actually get really nice, you know, IntelliSense. You get some code hints that tell you exactly what these function methods take. So DOM content loaded. I want to call load initial page. And no, I do not want to capture. Done. So I'm just saving my document. I'm just going to go into Blend. And now because we are running all of your application live, the JavaScript modification I made isn't noticeable by Blend right now. I'm going to refresh my document. I'm going to hit refresh. And once I've done that, notice what happens. You now see homepage container making an appearance in my document, in my live DOM. The JavaScript that I wrote here is actually, you know, was interpreted, was processed, and you now have it visible. I want to select it. And once I select it, you'll get plenty of UI that indicates the selected content is part of homepage.html, and you see the markup for homepage.html directly. But the difference is, because it's loaded in the context of default.html, all the style sheets, all the JavaScript that I wrote earlier is now applicable to this element as well, which is why, despite homepage.html being completely blank, completely boring, and void of any life in by itself, in, you know, when loaded inside default.html, it gets a lot of functionality that otherwise would not have had. Great. So now let's go ahead and build the first page of my application. And just to give you an overview, the first page is going to be very visual. There's going to be very little interactivity going on in the first page. The second page is where all the, you know, the really fun stuff happens, depending on whether you tend to skew towards visual design tasks or coding tasks. All right. So first off, I can see right off the bat that this element has no height specified to it. And what I'm going to do is create a style rule that allows me to specify height on this element. The homepage container is the name I gave to my div, so an ID has already been specified for me. So instead of going to style rules panel and adding a selector and typing in manually homepage container, we provide a lot of shortcuts because you'll find yourself often giving something an ID or a class value and wanting to create a style sheet or style rule based on it. So you can just right-click on an element and say, create style rule from element ID. And once you do that, we automatically take you to the right location and just put hashtag homepage container, which is what you would type to target this particular element. So I'm going to search for the height property and just give it a value of 100%. And once I've done that, you can see the full height being displayed here. Great. So next what I want to do is specify the background images. You know, the two images you saw in my application were actually defined as backgrounds. So I'm going to go ahead and add a few background layers. If you're familiar with CSS3, you'll know that one of the big investments that was made in making backgrounds more richer, being able to do more things with backgrounds, and layering is one of the new things which we provide support for. So I'm going to set add new layer, I'm going to specify background, and I'm going to specify filmstrip.png. And by default, once you've done that, without setting any other properties, you'll see your background image appearing. It doesn't quite look like a film strip right now. It looks more like a picnic tablecloth, but we can fix that by first setting the repeat property to say, I want it to repeat only horizontally, and I want it to be vertically centered in my screen. And immediately you can see that by setting the position Y and repeat properties, you can get it centered on your screen very quickly. Now, if you knew HTML5, if you knew CSS3, it would have been very simple for you. You just known that, okay, I can, you know, my background is being tiled, I'm going to hit position Y to center and repeat X. If you did not know CSS3, you could have inferred just by looking at the name of the properties here that position Y probably means I'm setting the Y position of something, and the repeat property probably means I'm setting the repeat property, but like I mentioned in the introduction, it would have been more productive if you just knew what these properties were. But Blend definitely does help you out, especially with the real-time feedback you get and say, okay, definitely it's not repeat Y, it's, what is round? Okay, well, learn something new. And then you go to repeat X. Great. So next up is the background of the logo itself. And that also specifies the background. And I'm going to specify that as main logo.png. And just like before, you get a default styling, which isn't quite what we want. Let me first move this up in the order so you can see it above the film strip. I'm going to say no repeat. And I want it to be centered both horizontally and vertically. Great. So I have the start of my first page done. When I demoed my app, I hovered over the picture of what was a bird, a chicken, and when I hovered over it, it changed from one state to another. Now, I spent a lot of time, or you know, you'll see a lot of the part of this demo is just talking about new things in HTML that we're showcasing, but all the old HTML techniques, all the tricks you might have learned over decades of just having worked on this platform, you know, are still applicable right here, and I want to show you one such thing, which has probably been around for at least 10, 11 years. How many of you are familiar with sprites or image sprites? Okay, so if you're familiar with that, unfortunately, that technique for using it for doing hovers of images still exists in HTML even today, and I don't know of a better way of doing it even now. So if you don't know what a sprite is basically one image that contains the various states an image can actually have, and you can just play with its visibility to the screen and change what is actually happening. So while you know, you're only having one image whose position is being moved around, to the user it looks like a really nice transition where a different image has been loaded altogether. So what I'm going to do is make the rollover effect of my chicken image actually be done as a sprite. So right now you have my sprite, you see both states of my application. And by application, I meant image. So what I'm going to do first is just center this element in my screen. If you've ever done centering in HTML before, you'll know it's not the most easy of things to do, especially when you start talking about centering things vertically. Fortunately, with the new specs that are going on for CSS, you have several ways of laying things out beyond just the normal approaches you had before. One of them is grid, and one of them is flexbox. I'm going to show you both in a few moments, but I'm going to start with flexbox right now. I have my homepage container. I'm going to set the property on its display property to say flexbox, which means that it is now going to be laying itself out using flexbox rules. And that's that happens by default via any content that's not given explicit height or width, which is fine for now because we'll fix it shortly. Okay, my homepage container. And now all I'm going to do is set some Flexbox properties on it that indicate where it's going to be positioned vertically and horizontally. And the pack and align properties help with that. So I'm going to set the flex pack property to center, so it's now horizontally centered. I'll set the align property to center as well. So now it is vertically centered. Great. So the next thing I'm going to do is clip the contents of the image so I only see one portion of it. So I've shown you how to add content from the asset panel and drop it visually onto the design surface. You don't have to do that. And if your workflow involves writing HTML manually, you can do that as well. So for this case, I'm going to wrap this image into a div, and I'm going to do that by just typing in the div code in the code editor itself. Div, get the closing tag, let's paste it right above this div right here, and just tab the whole thing over just so it looks proper. And notice that even though it typed in the code for div manually, you can see in the live DOM that it shows up properly. It is currently wrapping the image around. Great. So what I want to do next is just set a height on this div and clip the content so you don't actually see the part of the image I don't want. Let me give this div an ID value. Let's call this sprite container. And just like before, I'm going to create a style rule based on the ID I just created for it so I can actually make modifications. So I'm going to go to height. The height of this image is 360 pixels, so I'm going to divide it by 2 and just call it 180. And you can immediately see that it's currently centered properly. And the way you clip content in HTML is by setting the overflow property. So I'm going to set that to hidden. And once I've done that, you can immediately see that, okay, this image is now only that part is visible. And all I need to do now is specify when I hover over it, I want to go ahead and shift it up by 180 pixels. The way you specify hover is by using a selector, a pseudo selector. And so I'm going to go ahead and write the code for that manually. Let me first give my element, my chicken, an ID value, chicken button. And I'm going to go ahead and create the style rule targeting it. Chicken button, colon. We give you all the selectors that are possible, pseudo selectors, you know, both when a level 2 and level 3. So I'm going to type in hover. And very simply, I'm just going to set the margin property to say negative 180. Great. So if I were to hit F5 on this preview this application right now, it should work. See the default page, hover over it, and you know, to the user, this is beautiful, the rollover works fine. To someone who had to implement it, you're probably cringing a little bit. Great. So that was the first page of my application. So let's start with the second page. And one of the things I want you to emphasize is that the steps I did in building this entire application was not that much more complicated than what I showed with Hello World. I just modified some elements in my DOM, gave it an ID value, and just created style rules based on it. And even the second page, where there's a lot more things going on, those steps that I just demonstrated are not going to be that much different. So because I'm creating a next page, let's continue by adding a new HTML page. Add new item, HTML page. Let's call this one moviedisplay.html. And just like before, we had the exact same issue where the page by itself has no content that is useful. So I'm going to add a div and give it an ID value that I will just then use to place my movie display contents. So movie display container. Great. And what I'm going to do now is when this button is clicked, I want to clear the contents of this page and load the contents of moviedisplay.html. So let me go into Visual Studio for that. Reload some of the changes that were made, and then just copy and paste the rest of the code. I'll walk through the code as well, just to explain what's going on. All right, so we stopped at handle loaded page earlier, where it was empty, but now what I'm doing is I'm adding an event listener on click on the chicken button, whose ID value I gave it earlier, and saying, when I click this button, load the results page. And all I'm doing here is I want to clear the children of my target, which is the body element, and then just use the same fragments API that I showed you before to load the contents of moviedisplay.html. And after that, call getMovieData. I'll get to getMovieData shortly, but let's just stop right here. Great. So my application seems to have done. I'm going to hit F5. Let's see if this actually works. I'm going to hit F5. That. That seems about right. You know, my application didn't crash, and I go back to the start screen, and I see an empty page right here, which is what I want to do. Now, here's the challenge. I'm in moviedisplay.html, and I want to design it. Yet, the way you get to that state is by actually clicking on this button. And by opening just movie-display.html, you can't actually see any of the context of the JavaScript that has been loaded. That's a very common problem with HTML applications, because when you start talking about applications that go more than just deal with just standard HTML and static HTML and CSS, you have a lot of JavaScript, you have a lot of visuals that are provided by JavaScript, you have a lot of state that's visual that you only get to by navigating your application into it, as is the case with this example. So instead of coming up with like a new way or devising up a new way, like let's say like visual state management, like we had in XAML, we said people are going to be building these applications using jQuery, using all these various frameworks, and it's a generic problem. JavaScript is running, it is controlling what you see on the screen, and ultimately you'll want to style that content. So to help with that, we came with a feature called interactive mode. We already are running your application at design time. Why not go a step further and say, we will put you into a temporary mode where selection and clicking with your application doesn't go to Blend, but it goes to the application itself. So in this case, I'm going to click on the chicken, and I'm navigated to the next page. And now when I leave interactive mode, we're going to leave your application in a state you left it in while it was running. So what this means is that JavaScript that contains the code for loading movie-display.html, that part is run, loaded in memory, we exited it, and now I'm currently in the state where my application is in the next page. So if I select movie-display.container, you can see that now the selected content is part of movie-display.html, and I'm modifying the contents, which otherwise I would not have been able to do by just opening movie-display directly. And this is a feature I'm going to be showing you in more great detail in a few seconds when we actually get data from our data source running. So right now, same problem. By default, my div has no height. Let me just quickly solve that problem. Let me give it a value of 100%. Great. So now what I want to do is start adding the Windows control that will actually display all the data, especially data from the Rotten Tomatoes API that I'm going to be showing you shortly. So the way you add a control is no different than the way you add any kind of HTML element. You go to your assets panel. In this case, I'm going to search for flip view. I'm just going to go ahead and just drop it onto my design surface. And once I've done that, you'll see the flip view control has been added. And right now, you can see it has a height that is only half of my screen. Let me have it take up the entire space. By default, I can see the flip view control has a class value already defined. So instead of creating my own ID for this element, I'm going to go ahead and say, I'm going to reuse the flip view selector that's already been provided. So I'm going to say, right click on it, create star rule from element class, and create a win flip view selector. And the height on this one is going to be 100%. Great. So now I have my flip view control, and I have some data that I need to run. Let's just take a look at the data that is going to be generated for us. So getMovieData is a function that gets called once the movie display page is loaded. And this is very simple. You know, you have my API key. No, please don't use it. But what it does is I just make a simple call using the Rotten Tomatoes API. I return the data as JSON. I use the Windows JavaScript library's XHR call just to make that request. And I've just parsed it very easily by just using the response property, which is standard across all of these requests. And all I'm doing is, and this is the important part, I'm going through each data that is being returned and creating a title property, summary property, and box art property that contains the exact information from the data that's returned. And the last bit of detail is that I have a global variable called movie data, and I'm just initializing it to a binding list object where the array is now put into a form that I can easily data bind to, that I can easily work with. And the last thing I'm doing is I'm calling the win.js UI process all, just let the control know that I made some changes to how you might be displaying, so just redraw yourself if you detect any changes. Great. So I have my control. I have some data. Right now, there's no connection between them. There's a pure separation between what the visuals are saying, which is have an empty control, and the code behind. I need to somehow associate it. The way you modify properties on a control is by using the HTML attributes panel. This panel exists for every element out there where you can modify the standard HTML attributes. But for things like controls, you have extra properties that are very specific to the control that is currently selected. The property that pertains to the data showing up is item data source. So here I'm going to type in, what's it called, movie data? Yeah, I think it's movie data dot data source. I'm going to hit enter. Once I've done that, you can see, let me zoom in a bit so it's clear to see. You can see that some string data has now been provided. You can see title, summary, and then it's cut off. But you can definitely see that the data is now appearing. So what I want to do is the data is now in the context of this, of the flip view control. I want to now style it. And if you've done styling of data in the past, the way you do that is by using templates. That has not changed in HTML. So we have an item template property. I'm going to say create new template. I'm going to give it an ID value. Let's call this one movie template. And once I've done that, that the string of data that I had before has now been replaced with object, which seems like it might not be very useful right now, but it is actually quite good because at least now I know I can access properties on it without having to parse a string at design time, which you can definitely do with using like, you know, regex functions, but this is just much, much easier. Great. So all I'm going to do first is I'm going to select an object, and I want to make it just take up the full size of the screen. Now, flip view controls are pretty large, and right now the container that's housing it, which is this div element right here, has a height that is essentially just small enough to wrap only the content right here. Let me give this item a class value. And the reason I'm giving this item a class value is that, as templates tend to work, you have some HTML that gets duplicated and replicated in your DOM for each piece of data that you have. And IDs are meant to be unique. And so in other words, you should only have one ID per document that is has this particular value. But classes, on the other hand, though, are a great way of being able to identify elements across multiple variants of it. So I'm going to go to class value. I'm going to call this one my movie container. And because I'm creating a class primarily to style it, I'm going to say create style rule targeting this class. This is a shortcut to prevent me from having to create the class, right-click, and then say create style rule from class. I'm going to hit OK. Let me go to CSS properties panel and set the width and height of this to 100%. 100% height and 100% width. Great. So now I have my container sized appropriately. And all I want to do now is just, now is the easy part. Now is the part where it's going to be cruising. I'm going to create the various pieces of UI and bind it to the data that's currently available already. So I'm going to go ahead and delete object. I do not want that. And what I'm going to do is just specify the rows and columns where my data will live in. I showed you Flexbox earlier. I'll show you grid right now. And the way you specify grid is no different. You go to the display property and on the movie container element and specify MS grid. Now, once you specify the grid property, you can set grid properties by typing in columns and rows in text form, but that is really not that fun, when you can just do it all visually. Now, at least for this case, I'm just going to ballpark where the columns are and then tweak it later, but I'm just going to visually add rows, add the columns. So I'm going to start my first column right here. Here's where my logo would go. Here's where the box chart would go, and here's where the application summary would go. Let me just add a row where the title and everything will live. And now what you'll see is about 8 or 9 steps that are very similar, where I'm going to be dragging and dropping some content into this element, into the appropriate location, give the item a class value, create a style rule based on that class value, and then start making its position just right. So let me just start with the easy one. Let me start with the logo of the chicken, small logo chicken. Just drag and drop it into the design surface. And let me give it a class value, add new class, and call it small chicken logo, and create a style rule targeting this class. And let me go ahead and give it a position inside the grid perfectly in the center. Center and center. Great. So that's very simple. Next, let's go ahead and add our image, the box art. Let me drop this one right here. And let me give this one a value, a class value as well. Let's call this one box art. Create style rule targeting this class. And position it in the center. Give it a height value, actually, of 533 pixels. So it's the aspect ratio is preserved, and I specify the grid property to say I want it to be in the center. Great. So I have my image, but what I don't want this image to do, though, I don't want it to actually just be this temporary image. I want it to be the image based on the data that's currently loaded behind the scenes. So I'm going to my HTML attributes panel. Because I'm in the image element, the source attribute is shown for me. I can see that images/temp.png is what is currently visible. I'm going to go and go to edit data binding. There's a properties marker, which if you've used Blend before is the piece of UI that gives you additional options above and beyond what you can just see by the editor directly. I'm going to go to edit data binding. I'm going to type in box art. And once I've done this, it is currently loading in the background. It'll load in a second. So let me just continue on with my demo. I hope it loads in a second. Let me paste it right here. Yeah, you can see the image loaded. I added my heading 1 tag. And this is going to be where the title of my application goes. So I'm going to say add new class, give it the title value, create a style rule based on it. And I'm going to make this one, well, actually, while I'm here, let me just specify this to say title. You can see Argo being displayed, again, based on the data we have. And let me just make it larger. Let me make the text larger, make the font a little bit different. Go to text, font family. It's going to be Casteller and Serif. And just make the color. I'm going to use a font picker and just pick a red from right here. Great. And I'm just positioned this in the center. But notice what I'm doing here, though. All I've done so far is nothing more than just adding a class value using the same CSS properties panel that I've been showing you, you know, throughout this demo. I'm just setting the appropriate property on it. All you really need to know is not really how to use Blend, just which property you really need to set. And once you do that, the panels and UI you use in Blend are very minimal, just a handful you really need to be paying attention to. So just like before, grid, center this one. Actually, I don't want to center that part. I want to center it vertically. Argo. Great. So just as a sanity check, let me just make sure the app, you know, everything looks fine so far. I have my interactive mode. Click on this button, H1. You can see Argo now currently displayed. And notice that even though the data is coming remotely, that's no problem. I mean, Blend runs your application JavaScript independent of where it's actually coming from. So it has no problem connecting to the web, getting some data, and displaying it all at design time. Next image, Cloud Atlas, Hotel Transylvania. So one thing I noticed right off the bat is that, you know, when a title is really small, it looks fine. But if it's longer than just very small, it goes into two lines. Let me go ahead and fix that. Let me select the item, see why it's doing that. The reason why the title is not stretching across all of them is that your grid has a property that tells you how many columns to actually span. Right now, by default, I have it spanning only one column. We actually have 1, 2, 3 columns of a space we could potentially use. Let me go and specify that. MS grid column span, specify 3. And once I've done that, you can see that the text expands multiple columns. So this is another great example of how a feature like interactive mode made this very, very easy. Because if I did not have a feature like this, I would have had to essentially, okay, here's my title element, exit my application, figure out where I declared it in the style rule, and then make the change, then hit F5 again just to make sure my application actually took that change. But instead, by using interactive mode, we made it very predictable. We made it, you didn't have to guess. I knew that this is the state I'm in. I selected it. I made the change. I could immediately see that a change was taken. I didn't have to actually have a whole complicated rinse and repeat process where a lot of guesswork might have been involved. And this is actually a big time saver, especially when you start building applications. And I can speak from personal experience that before we had this feature, building an application in Windows 8 took a lot longer for me than it did after I had this. And I'm hoping that all of you get the same benefit as well. Okay. Last thing I'm going to do is the summary. Just get the summary of the contents displayed. I'm going to go to div and just type it in, provide my summary information right here. And let's give it a class value, just like before. Nothing has changed. Summary. And this will be the last item we're going to be doing, by the way, so you don't have to brace yourself another 10 minutes of just adding elements and giving class values. All right, let me give it a height. And let me give it a height value of, let's say, 90%. And just like before, I'm going to bind the text content property, in the case of our div, to the summary data that's already been loaded for us. Hit summary, you get it. And of course, it's very, very small. Let's fix that. Just the same way I did before. Go to text, font family. Actually, the font family is fine. 24 pixels height. And let's make it have a black color. Great. So now let's make sure that this looks good across all various sizes of content. Cloud Atlas, Transylvania. Okay, with Hotel Transylvania, it's actually not bad. Let's go to Argo. Okay, you can see the text is cut off. This is where I quickly fix that. And notice that I'm using interactive mode to navigate to that state, select it and see exactly where the problem is, and just fix it right now. I'm going to go to the overflow property, the one I mentioned before for being able to set the sprite height. It's the same one you can also use to specify whether scroll bar appears or not. So I'm going to set this to auto. And let's just make sure that now that the overflow property is set to auto on the text, I go to interactive mode, I hover over it, you can now see that we now have a scroll bar that displays and allows you to scroll through the content. And all this was done again easily by just modifying the properties on it without having to guess what's going on. All right, great. So that's an example of building an HTML application using Blend, taking advantage of all the features that we provide. It's a, you know, give you a whirlwind tour of everything that went on. There's a lot more other stuff that we have as well, which I'm going to break down into probably the more interesting one, which I'll talk about next if there are no more questions. All right, let's get to the next part. I'm going to go back to my slides. And the title bar still appears. Taskbar, I mean. All right, so just showed you pick a flick. And so the last part I'm going to talk about is really how to build applications that really work well on devices. You know, as most of you know, and all of you probably have Surface tablets right now. And one of the things about applications that are built for Windows 8 is that now your application is designed to work not just adequately, but they're supposed to work really well on a tablet, a laptop, or a TV big screen. And what this really means is that you're designing an app that works on a small screen, a medium screen, and a large screen. So that's something that you probably guessed you would have to take care of. If you've done Windows Phone development, some of the issues with designing an application that works in both landscape and portrait are now applicable because tablets are a certain class of devices that can be actually viewed across various orientations. My laptop and desktop probably will not go into that mode. I mean, I can turn my laptop as much as I want, but I don't think it has the functionality for displaying my UI in portrait, but your tablet certainly will. So that's one thing you need to take into account. And the last thing that is very new to Windows 8 is the ability to view your application across various layouts, various states. So by default, your apps are always in full screen. You might have seen them in full screen as well. But you have a certain way of being able to not minimize your app completely out of your view, but have it viewed on just a small portion of your screen, which is a snap view. So like a music player, for example, you might just want to say, I really just want to see my playlist here, but I'm going to be working on my email on the right-hand side. So a snap view. And your application can be in filled view, which is the exact opposite, where it's not taking up all the space, but just enough to keep all of my attention focused on the application. So it's filled. So now that kind of makes building your application and making sure it works across all of these various states a little bit more important. There's one more little thing to focus on. We've always taken for granted that as your resolution keeps going up, keeps increasing, your UI gets smaller and smaller and smaller. Now, that worked great in the past, but why might that be a problem today? Anybody want to shout out an answer for why? Pardon me? Touch. Touch is the answer, because the mouse is a very precise pointing device, whereas your fingers have a certain physical limit before any UI you're trying to interact with just becomes very hard to click, very hard to work with. So what Windows does is it detects your DPI, detects your device characteristics, and scales your UI by 40% or 80%, which is what really allows you to have a device with a very high resolution on a small screen still be usable. And knowing how to make sure your application works across all of those variations is also very, very important. So I'm going to demo some of this by using a tool called SwagWatch. So there are several ways of doing this. One way is you could go out and buy many devices. You could enlist the help of your friends and then be able to have them enlist their support and make sure your application works across all these various states. But in many ways, it's often very expensive, very time-consuming, and also not quite the most productive use of your resources. So what we've done to help make this easier is we have what's known as a device panel. And what this panel does is it gives you a way to easily preview in real time how your application looks across all those various states I just showed you in the slide. So by default, I'm running in full screen landscape. I can go into snap filled and see how my application looks like. For example, I can quickly see that, okay, my logo is way too large in this case, so that's an issue. Go into snapped, and same thing, I can see my logo is way too big. I definitely do know that my controls are resizing properly, the built-in controls are doing just the right thing. And in portrait, similar behavior, the logo is kind of big. So let's go ahead and fix that very quickly. So the way you fix these kinds of issues, there are two ways of really doing this. One way is by using media queries. Media queries is a great way of being able to conditionally specify, in certain conditions, these star rules need to be applied to affect how my application looks. And the other way is by using JavaScript. And I want to show you both ways, because they're both going to be highlighted in a second. So I'm going to be starting with JavaScript first, because it's very clear that the logo is something that needs to be changed. And you can't really use CSS for being able to modify the source of an image element. So, and there are a lot of things you'll also not be able to do using CSS. So being able to use JavaScript is actually quite useful. So I already have the code provided here, because we're running close out of time. And I'm going to uncomment this out and show you what it's doing. Okay. So what I have here, I'm just standard event listener on the window object for the resize event. So when my application goes into the various states, the resize event gets fired. And what I'm doing is I'm calling the Windows runtime API called application view. And I'm also getting a hook into my logo element, which has a selector of hashtag my logo. And what I'm doing is this. Every time the resize event gets fired, every time handle resize gets called, check to see what state my application is currently in. If I'm in view state number 2, I want you to load the small Swagwatch logo at PNG. If I'm in one, which is filled, load the medium Swagwatch logo. And for everything else, load the large one. And these images currently exist in my project. And the values 2, 1 are actually documented on the Microsoft website. You know, it wasn't trial and error for me to figure out what those numbers were. OK, great. I have my default.js. Let me just refresh my document to make sure that that new JavaScript took. And let me just go into filled. And once I've done that, notice that now the logo is now smaller. I go back to normal, it's fine. I go into portrait, or snapped, and it works fine as well. And I can just select that element just to indicate that it has done that by going to HTML attributes panel. And we see the source attribute has like a blue outline around it. And what this means is that the value they specified in markup has been modified by the runtime, which in this case is the JavaScript that we wrote. So we're very aware of that. I can hover over it and say that, OK, the markup value is Swagwatch logo. The runtime value is small Swagwatch logo. And if you ever want to just see what all is being set, you can just go to your application. I'll just scroll up and down just to see what are all the things that are being set by the control, being set by something in CSS, or even by the user agent. So it's a great way to just quickly see what are all the things that you might need to take into account when you're trying to modify things. Great. So the last thing I'm going to do is I want this logo to be centered in my UI right here. And for that, you could use JavaScript, but why use JavaScript when you can use media queries? And I'm going to do media queries because I kind of promised you guys I would show you that, and it would be unfair for me to not show it. So I'm going to go to my default.css. And I mentioned earlier when you create a new document, you have body declared, you have like four style sheets or four media queries already defined for you. As you could imagine, these automatically defined media rules correspond to the various view states your application can be in. So for example, this one is full screen landscape, filled, or the one that's actually highlighted, when it's not grayed out, is the one that pertains to the view we're currently in, which is MS view state snapped. And it's very simple right here. I'm just going to go ahead and add a new style rule. I think it's called my logo. And all I'm going to do now is just specify a margin property on it of, let's say, 70 pixels. OK, wrong one. I have a transition displayed as well, which is why you're seeing a slight delay between me going from that view to the other one. And that's it. That's all it took. It's just making sure it had the appropriate media query and then having that appropriate style rule selected. If you did not have these media queries, or if you were working on a project where the CSS had already been defined for you, you can just go to right-click on something, select Add Media Rule, and we actually give you the ability to type in your media query condition from scratch, or we also give you pre-selected items, which more than likely correspond to what you're actually looking for, which is fill, landscape, snapped, and portrait. So you don't have to actually create a project from scratch and know the syntax is. We give you an easy way of being able to do that automatically. So great. So now if I go to landscape, you'll see that everything is right, the alignment is right. If I go into filled, it's fine. If I go into snapped, it is centered because this media query is only applicable in that state. So that's a very, very quick way of being able to design for the layouts. And resolution is another big thing. We give you the most common list of UI presets that you might want. So by default, your Surface tablets, for example, all run at 1366 by 768, which is what we also target your applications for. But for example, my laptop is running at 1920 by 1080. I can just select that and just see what my application looks like. And notice with more space available, I see three rows of content as opposed to two. And if I wanted to do the scaling factor, we actually give you, like, for example, 1920 by 1080 on a 10.6-inch screen has a really high DPI, so the UI scaled by 140%. And you can see what your app looks like. You can see that some of the content is clipped. And these are things that you will need to take into account as part of your development. But you can at least identify very quickly in Blend that, OK, there's a problem in 140%. And 180% does not have that problem. So just things to keep in mind as you're designing your application. So with that, let's go ahead and start into the wrap-up stage of this session. Okay, I'm going to try my best to have this not show the task bar this time. Well, one day I'll get it right. Next slide. So highlights. So just want to run through like some of my favorite features that I showed off in this session so far. First of all, we have an accurate design surface. It's not an emulation. We're actually running the same rendering engine behind the scenes as your applications are at runtime. So all that is the same. So if you were to open a normal Windows 8 application, the source code for it in like an editor like Expression Web, which has really great HTML5 support for building websites, you'll see this is what the application looks like. Without JavaScript running at your design surface, this is what you see. And if you use any third-party tools for doing HTML editing, if they're not using JavaScript, you're going to see exactly this. And that application corresponds to the application you have running in Blend. That just shows you how JavaScript intensive all of the content you will be building is, and certainly how JavaScript intensive all the templates you start off with R. Second, we create clean and predictable HTML and CSS. You know, one of the things we wanted was, you know, I have friends who are web designers, and I want them to not shun me from social events by telling them I work on a visual design tool at Microsoft. So we wanted to make sure that, just for the sake of all of our social lives, that we create great quality markup. And we hopefully saw some of that and highlighted. And second, we make it very seamless to work with controls, fragments, and templates. You know, implementation-wise, they might make your application look very different. But from a design point of view, we said there's really little value in having someone, as you're visually designing an application, to be, you know, presented front and center with all this additional noise. So we make it very simple for you to just work on files that are loaded from a different document, for working with controls like the flip view control. Very seamless. You just add them, modify their properties, style them. Everything works just fine. Last, and the feature that I think, you know, is really cool, is the one where you have interactive mode, being able to navigate to different states of your application that you probably would not be able to do unless you're actually hitting F5. So because these applications are very JavaScript intensive, being able to reach these hard-to-reach states at design time is very useful, and I showed it off a fair amount of times as I was styling the pick-a-flip application. And the last thing is, you have excellent integration with Visual Studio. I didn't spend as much time as I would have wanted on the debugging side or being able to set breakpoints and seeing how the interaction between the applications work. But you have really good approach for being able to design an application in Blend visually and then being able to exactly modify the same application in a tool like Visual Studio without much difficulty. So with that, you know, that's the end of this session. You know, if you have any questions, please feel free to ask me. You can shout out or ask it from the microphones there. I'll be working the booths in Building 92 on the second floor where the Visual Studio area is. So if you have any more questions, you can always drop by there and get in touch with me as well. And please write your evaluations. I believe it's easily accessible somehow through the build application.